WFAN, WFAN-FM, New York.
Mr. Minko.
Bob, good to see you here. Where have you been the last few weeks?
What do you mean, where have I been the last few... Where have you been the last few weeks?
I've been around.
Yes, you certainly have.
Yeah.
I hope you had a nice Christmas.
Thank you. You too. And I hope you got gifts for everybody that you needed to.
Well, Mink, let's put it this way. I'm still working on yours. But as you saw, I was distributing some gifts already this morning. Yes, Santa Salter was here today.
And the iconic one is not here today, but he's busy playing with his toy trains.
You know, folks, Mr. Minko came in this morning telling me the story that he actually had a dream that featured Dove Kramer.
Yeah.
And Dove is not here.
No.
That's
to
the
defend himself.
That's the interesting thing.
To defend his actions.
We'll explore this dream a little bit more next week when Dove is actually present, because Dove will definitely want to hear this one.
Oh,
all right. Well, it has, you know, here it is. It's 6 o'clock in the morning. I feel like I'm exhausted. You know why, Mink? Because, first of all, I'm all over in this building. I'm visiting all these different radio stations that are owned by this company with one purpose in mind. I want to boost morale. That's what I do.
Well, that's why you're the head of the empire, and you want to boost the morale. I can understand that.
But it's exhausting work, Mink.
I understand. Right. Anything profitable is exhausting.
Oh, boy, here we go. All right. Mr. Minko is going to keep us in fine form with the sports updates this morning. We will have a good time. We have a great show to bring to you as well. The topics that we're going to get into in discussion are going to be ones that will definitely interest people listening to WFAN, because these topics have been explored before on the air here. There is a tie-in and a way to the sporting world. The first guest who is joining us is Mary Lee Esty. Mary Lee has a very interesting background because she is the founder of the Brain Wellness and Biofeedback Center. She has a doctorate in health psychology. She's a clinical social worker, and she has some expertise to share with us. She's a senior fellow in biofeedback and neurofeedback with the Biofeedback Certification International Alliance, also a member of the Academy of Certified Social Workers. And she is joining us by phone on our program. We'll be joined a little bit later in discussion also by another guest. First of all, it's nice to have you join us on our program. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm actually excellent.
Good.
We are going to be talking about some of the information that is contained in a book entitled Conquering Concussion, Healing TBI Symptoms with Neurofeedback and Without Drugs. And in this case, I'll mention the acronym TBI, which a lot of people know, refers to traumatic brain injury. Why this book at this time?
Well, that's a very good question, because it didn't start out to be a book. I've been doing biofeedback and neurofeedback since 1991. And just as chance would have it, several people came in who had pretty nasty head injuries of some kind or other, concussions, TBI. You know, there's no real distinction there. Concussion is the beginning of any traumatic brain injury. But we tend to think that a concussion is something less, it just sounds less dramatic, doesn't it, than TBI, traumatic brain injury. But they're not really well defined. But, you know, I had people who'd been hit by cars and thrown in the air and fallen off of high places and really struggling with depression, all kinds of, fatigue, headache, memory problems. And the one common thing was that they had all had these pretty dramatic accidents, you know, kinds of things you might hire a stuntman to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were other people who, you know, weren't quite have such interesting stories as a background, but had similar symptoms, many unable to keep jobs. So make a long story short, through what is now the national, NIH Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine, I was asked to accept a grant to treat mild to moderate TBI with a type of neurofeedback. Neurofeedback just means getting some kind of mechanism, now computers, that can record some kind of information from the body. It could be anything, your heart, breathing, in this case, from the scalp, so that you can see what the EEG or the brain waves are doing. And when we are symptomatic in some way, and it can be many, many things, we have a list here of the sort of primary symptoms after concussion. I think there's 20 to 30 items on there, just common things that we all know about, like depression and fatigue. But strangely enough and wonderfully enough, the 12 people who were picked for that study in 1996 were all picked on the basis of the belief that they would never be better. They had years and years, I think it ranged from 7 to 22 years after their head injuries, been through multiple rehabilitation programs, and yet were still not doing well at all. So this was done with the Kessler Rehabilitation Hospital in West Orange, New Jersey. I did all the treatment down here in Bethesda. But the great news, and I want people to know, concussion is not a good thing, but the good news is that with neurofeedback technology, it is possible to eliminate or reduce a lot of those symptoms. We can't help absolutely everybody. There's a big range of difficulties following any injury. But in most cases, we really can help people have fuller lives and better lives. And it all started with that study. I hadn't planned to do anything like that. But as a result of it, I've done nothing except neurofeedback since then in my office here in the Washington, D.C. area. We're in Bethesda now. So I met Carol Shiflett, who was writing a book on migraine. It's called Migraine, Brains, and Bodies. And it was so good that her writing is just light and lively. And let me just add that even though this is a book about concussion, a kind of scary topic, It is written in such a way it's very easy to read. Everything is discussed in terms of stories of real people. These are real people. They're not made-up stories. And so I asked her, because of her writing style, if she would do a brochure for me, for my office, for our concussion clients, because they didn't understand what was happening to them. I have people walking in and calling in tears because they're saying, now I know why I have X problem or whatever. So the concussion, this brochure, I didn't envision much of anything. It was 4 or 5 pages. It's a 280-page brochure now because it is a huge topic. It touches so many lives in just many, many, many ways. And yet it remains something of a mystery in that I remember things I was told as a child. You remember the phrases like, oh, your mother must have dropped you on your head when you were born.
Right.
People do silly things or can't seem to get things right. And as it turns out in the research for the book, we found that, and I verified this, that common concussion is, the effects of it are thought to be maybe not all that important, right? So there's nothing formally taught in medical school about concussion, which explains the weird things that some people get told in the ER when they go in. So it was an accident, but I think kind of a happy accident, and it's just thrilling for me. I've had people continue to have people walk in with a copy of the book. It's all dog-eared and got little Post-its sticking out of it, and they're saying, now I know why I do X or why I lose my keys all the time. A thing that surprises many, many people, and I think even physicians are learning about this now, is that Attention deficit disorder or hyperactive disorder is a common outcome of early childhood concussion. I learned that from a fellow who's recently passed on. John Freeman was head of some pediatric neurology at Johns Hopkins, and he said that when a child is brought to them because there's learning problem, you know, some kind of issue with learning, that his words, I think, were, we know now that we have to ask a lot of questions about early childhood falls, especially age 5 and before, because when they get in school, they will be diagnosed with ADD. And that's a big surprise to a lot of people. But in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, which is the Bible for choosing diagnostic codes for insurance purposes,
right,
the post-concussion, the items that must be met to get the diagnosis of post-concussion or attention deficit are virtually identical. One that differs significantly is that often post-concussion people can become, well, not just irritable but violent. So I think maybe you can get a hint as to why this little brochure turned into a book. It was accidental, but it's been an enormous learning experience, and we're finding that it's achieving what I had hoped, but in a larger fashion, in that people are becoming educated about it, and we're passionate about prevention. There are things that can be done to make good choices, even while you're playing on the field. Parents especially, to know what to look for and what to do and what not to push. Even the choice of sport can be very important. I think it's a family decision. It's very, very, it's vital to have fun in life and not be scared. But make a decision and have an idea of what can be done, you know, if you begin to have chronic headache. Depression is a common aftermath. Chronic migraine is really, really tough to live with. And as a result of the work I've done with concussion right from the beginning, we now have published studies on the effects on our veterans, Iraq, Afghanistan veterans. I've got published research on that in the Journal of Neuropsychiatry. You know, with the blast injuries as well as the physical injuries that go with that, because, you know, the blast has an enormous impact on the body, because you have this high pressure wave that's alternating in sort of milliseconds with a vacuum, so everything in the body expands and contracts. But they also get hit either by objects that have been picked up in the blasts, or if they're in the vehicles that are hit with IEDs, the rollover injuries. In some cases out in the open, I've treated people who've been picked up and thrown long distances and, you know, then hitting the wall and hitting the ground. So it's kind of a perfect storm of getting your body and your brain all jostled at the same time.
Dr. Mary Lee Esty is talking with us on our program on The Fan this Sunday morning. We'll be joined in moments by Carol Shiflett as well. And we're going to take a pause in our discussion with you, Mary Lee. Come back. We'll talk more about this topic of concussion and some related areas of discussion. And yes, we will get into talking a little bit about some of that passion about prevention and talk more, too, about some of those published reports on the injuries that you've just mentioned, as I want to follow on a couple of different things that you've mentioned thus far in our discussion. The book that you mentioned is entitled Conquering Concussion, Healing TBI Symptoms with Neurofeedback and Without Drugs. Mary Lee is going to be with us for our entire program this morning. We roll until 7:30 on Sunday mornings. Mr. Minko has our look around the sporting world. Mink. Big day in terms of
Bob Salter, Sports Radio 101.9 FM, The Fan, and Sports Radio 66, WFAN.
It's amazing on Sunday mornings when those jingle singers stop by, and some of them actually are positioned in a way so they're on an upper floor from here, and they actually sing down. It's amazing the way this works on Sunday mornings. We're in discussion with Dr. Mary Lee Esty. She's a doctor with a PhD. She's a licensed social worker. Her PhD is in health psychology. She, along with Carol Shiflett, putting together an interesting publication that we are talking about in the course of our discussion. We're on the topic of a concussion. Carol is going to join us in moments here on The Fan as well. When we talk about the topic of concussion, how does it, you know, for those who don't know, and Carol is joining us on our program. First of all, good morning, Carol.
Good morning. Good Hello.
Morning. Good morning, Carol. It's nice to have you join us. Mary Lee is with us as well.
Okay.
Okay. Concussion, how does it change one's life?
Oh, what a question.
Mm-hmm.
A better one, maybe, how doesn't it?
Okay.
Which I've never thought about either. one of the things is it's so sneaky. It's called an invisible wound because people look okay.
Hello.
You know, they walk, they talk, they seem okay, but they can become extremely skillful at covering up the fact that they're not really remembering what you've just said. So it changes life in invisible ways. For example, many people, I've seen situations where a marriage was about to fall apart. One partner, I've seen it both ways, men and women being the ones who've been concussed, and you know, they're not functioning well on their jobs anymore, they forget things all the time, but they look okay, and they, you know, you have no reason, just having a few minutes with them maybe, to think there was anything in particular that was a problem, but they lose their jobs. But in two cases, neurofeedback people make some kind of what we call a map of brainwave activity. So it's a graphic showing whether the brain is a well-balanced team or not. Can all those different parts of the brain really communicate to make it possible to interact skillfully with family, socially, jobs? But if some parts don't work well, then it becomes harder and harder to do things. And I've twice seen, one was very interesting. There was a woman who was brought in. She came with her husband. They clearly were not comfortable with each other, shall we say. The husband was angry. But a map was done showing how her brain, with the imbalances in the way her brain was working. And when the husband saw the map, he said, "You mean she's not making it up?"
Mm.
Now that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was convinced that all of the stuff, you know, she couldn't really cook anymore, she just couldn't remember to do things, was on purpose. And it makes it very difficult because you look okay.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're in conversation, I hear this all the time, the brain gets so easily overwhelmed with sound and content. People will read the same thing over and over again if they're on the job, and they get demotions because they can't do their work anymore. I think I've had 5 or 6 people who had made it to PhD programs, but they could not get the last step done. They were, you know, everything had been done except getting that dissertation done, and they just couldn't do it. Had at least 2 people who worked at the World Bank, and they were close to losing their jobs while they were students. And once they were treated with neurofeedback, finished their degrees, one went on to teach at Berkeley, you know, working full-time and getting their doctorates. On a lesser level, children who, in whatever sports they were playing, had concussions, but either because of headaches or the fact that they just couldn't concentrate anymore and were become a problem in the schoolroom because sitting still becomes very difficult. You know, they're teachers are saying, put them on medication or else. But in many cases, we've had them out of school for weeks, sometimes months. In fact, recently, a young high school lacrosse player was out for a year. But she's back in now, and she's not having constant headaches. She's not dizzy. She can read and concentrate and remember. So it changes marriages, it changes parental relationships, it changes employment relationships, and poverty, you know, if we want to look at the two extremes, people who function well, people who've had a concussion, and it can lead to poverty, and there are very, very high rates of incarceration with repeat concussions.
Mm-hmm.
This is a huge social problem. It's not just a personal problem. It is a big social problem. And I want to pull back from listing all, you know, these horrible things that can happen and do happen and are happening all the time. Domestic violence is common. But it doesn't have to happen.
Well, let's follow on.
Let me rephrase that. It doesn't have to end that way. Neurofeedback can change this. So there's a lot of good news. And there are thousands of people in this country and around the world who can provide this service, and we can tell you how to get in touch with them.
All right. This idea of neurofeedback, you've mentioned this a couple of different times. You've explained a little bit of how this works. Naturally, people also in the society in which we live are going to ask the question that I thought of immediately of, okay, well, how long a process is this?
Ah, very good question. It can be with really serious multiple injuries, it can take months. For most people, in my office, our average number of sessions, and that includes people who've had strokes, you know, many kinds of injuries, is under 20. Those are half-hour sessions. It can be very quick with... Well, we were talking about veterans briefly. There's one veteran I've treated who had a sniper to the, so that the left hemisphere of the brain was removed completely. Mm-hmm. And he made enormous progress with speech, because when the left hemisphere is injured, often people can't speak at all. And there were months, actually a couple of years when he didn't. But combining therapies and neurofeedback had a lot to do with this. He was able to speak and speaks fluently now, which is really amazing. That's a huge extreme. It's not always going to turn out that way. But for the sort of middle brain injury, concussion, whatever you want to call it, mild traumatic brain injury, it's called, there's nothing mild about it. It's totally life-changing. It is possible to get full function back. In that study I was talking about, seven of those 12 people went back to work at their previous level of functioning. They were not thought to be ever able to do that. We have some videos of some of these people and the veterans who've, well, that combines traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a process that changes. It's thought to change the neurochemical functioning of the brain because it's all electrical and neurochemical processes that make it possible for us to function. And it's painless. It's non-invasive. We get people off of medication all the time. It's not our goal, but it just happens. Because the computer is communicating with the brain. There's sensors on the skin, on the scalp. The computer can then read and record and display on a screen something about the way the brain is functioning, mm-hmm. wherever those sensors may be placed. And the point is to turn that brain back, to help it find its way back to a really balanced state. Just like we watched the Redskins last night play very well. They were really on. And the brain's just like a team. If some parts of the team aren't up to par, the whole team is struggling. They have to work a lot harder, and the brain's just the same way. If some parts are off the circuit, it's not going to be easy to do the job that you used to do really well. Write reports, sit in meetings. Gosh, I've had people in well, of course, around here, government agencies in Washington, mm-hmm. who had to have help from friends to kind of nudge them and say, you know, remember, you got to do this, you got to do that, or stay awake. Oh, yes, that's another one, insomnia and fatigue. Fatigue is a huge problem.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to get out of bed, hard to focus. Many people sleep way too much, and often in the places where they shouldn't, like in a meeting.
And that could be a problem, yes.
That can be a big problem. Mm-hmm. There's one really lovely woman who's working in a very large agency, good at her job, but I mean, she would fall asleep and find her head on the computer keyboard. You can imagine what the screen looked
like.
Wow. She had friends sit beside her in meetings, and you know, they'd just constantly elbow her. And what had happened was when she was in college, this is like 10 years or more, she'd been having this problem. You know, just goofing around with friends. Some guy threw her over his shoulder but lost his grip, and she went straight down on her head.
Oof.
After that, she said she'd fall asleep in class. And fortunately, this was sounds like a very nice school. The professors would just throw erasers at her, and students would try to keep her awake. I think she had fewer than 10 treatments, and this wasn't happening anymore.
Hmm.
Because, you must have heard the term neuroplasticity.
Yes.
You know, it's all over now. It's a nice umbrella term. Basically, what it means is that the brain has the resources to rewire itself, to change the way it functions. And that is obviously what all these cognitive therapies and certainly the neurofeedback therapies are accomplishing, is a return to function. You know, get every player on the players that should be on the field. You don't want too many, right? But have a team out there that can work together.
Carol, I don't want to leave you out of our discussion as well. This, we've covered a lot of different areas thus far. What has been your reaction to the feedback that there has been to the book and to this work? Has this surprised you?
Well, it's gone a couple of ways. You have the people who are just absolutely thrilled. And then you have the people who watch this happen and still say, oh, this can't be real. This can't happen. It's not possible. And besides, there's no research. And that plays into a lot of the current problems with neurofeedback, in that it's just impossible to get research money, funding, and so forth. And the people who continue to research it are doing it because they are so very passionate about the outcome and what happens. It is really remarkable. I researched this for quite a while before diving in, and you just watch people change. You just see it change. And it's very, very different from drugs. Everybody wants a pill. Everybody wants a drug. Everybody wants to pop something. But the sad truth is that there just isn't any drug that will treat the cognitive issues of concussion. And this does. And you see the veterans change, you see the housewives change, you see all sorts of changes. We have one entire chapter on veterans, just veterans. It is rewriting the representation of Mary Lee's research with Afghanistan Iraqi vets and the stories. First time I saw those, when she gave me these case histories, I just sat down and cried. And now it's like, wow, look at this. And it just continues. We'll see what happens. But I'm hoping that this will make things better for a lot of people. The biggest thing in here is what happens in concussion. We need to know that. And this has been something that has never really been paid attention to, not recognized. And now it is. And that's a huge thing. It's just a huge thing.
I want to follow on that point and a couple of other things that have been mentioned. We got a lot to go thus far in our discussion. We'll take a pause for look around the sporting world and a couple of messages to come our way. We're talking with Carol Shiflett and Mary Lee Esty on a program on The Fan. The book is entitled Conquering Concussion, Healing TBI Symptoms with Neurofeedback and Without Drugs. 640 is our time.
Bob Salter, Sports Radio 101.9 FM,
The Fan,
and Sports Radio 66, WFAN.
It's Sunday morning on The Fan, and good morning, everybody. We are in discussion with Mary Lee Esty and Carol Shiflett on our program, talking with them about the topic of concussion. Traumatic brain injury has come up as an area of discussion as well, and they've shared a lot with us thus far. We've also talked a little bit about this book entitled Conquering Concussion, Healing TBI Symptoms with Neurofeedback and Without Drugs. Mary Lee, you mentioned something early on in this discussion, that's an area that always gets my interest. And Carol, you can feel free to jump in on this too. You said that nothing is formally taught in medical school about concussion. And as you said that, my thought was, why? Why not? Especially now.
Very good question. I just want to briefly go back to Carol's statement about no medications that are effective for TBI, and that is backed up by research done at Walter Reed in what's called DIVBIC, the Defense and Veterans Brain Injury Center, and in the Journal of Neuropsychiatry, they have stated formally that there is no medication that will treat TBI. The medications that are used try to treat the symptoms of depression and concentration and all of that. But as to why there's nothing taught, I think it's because going back to the invisible wound, most people look okay. And how many times have you read in the paper that an athlete or, you know, a famous person just needs some time to heal and then they'll be fine and they look okay? So it's difficult because even the most sophisticated imaging that is used now will not show anything wrong in the brain after a head injury, unless, you know, there's huge bleeds, you know, something structural has happened that part of it just does show up because of bleeding usually. However, the University of Pittsburgh has recently come up with a new form of imaging, taking MRI, functional MRIs, and going on beyond that, so that for the first time they have imaged, actually have pictures of broken fibers in the brain. There are trillions, you know, nobody knows how many there are, that are our communication wires, they're not cell towers, but they are the wires that transfer energy from one part of the brain to the other, so send signals so that different parts on a network, it's a huge network, and when some of the transmission cables there get bruised, broken, shut down in some way, they're interfered with, our thought processes slow down, our physical processes slow down. Speed of transmission is vital, and it's very important for people to understand this. And I've spoken with neurologists. I didn't believe this. That statement was in an article by a group of neurologists, and I thought, this can't be this day and age. But, you know, time in medical school is really at a premium. I mean, nutrition, I think, I've been told that it's, in 4 years of medical school, they get about 2 hours of nutrition. So sticking something else in can be really tricky. It's tough. So I think that's changing, though. Let's face it, the wars have brought real public understanding to the fact that things can happen to our brains and it affects behavior in multiple ways. So the military medicine folks are the ones who are really at the forefront of some of the, especially, of head injury, but also especially of the truly hidden things like weight gain. You ever hear of weight gain as part of post-concussion or traumatic brain injury? Probably not. Because when the brain bounces around, the fibers in the affect the whole endocrine system get messed up, and one of the consequences is weight gain.
Mm-hmm.
So the military medicine folks are probably going to be the ones, I think they are at this point, right on the cutting edge of defining the various problems that can follow concussion and of what can we do about it. You know, they're searching, trying a lot of different things, and I'm just very pleased that we've had two articles just recently published in Military Medicine Research on chronic headache and post-traumatic stress. So these are big issues, and you know, change comes slowly. Yesterday I saw the movie Conquering Concussion,
mm-hmm.
which I know there are some folks who have problems believing all of that, but change is hard, and I'm certainly not one to say, oh, nobody should play football. I think people should do what they have a passion for, but I do think that if neurofeedback, Kirk Cousins yesterday for the Redskins, he spent the summer doing neurofeedback for peak performance. That is happening more and more because it speeds up reflexes. It makes it possible to make better decisions. And poor decision-making is a huge element in all kinds of concussion. How many kids do you know who have behavior problems at school? They get expelled. They're so impulsive. But it's thought to be somehow just that they don't listen, that they don't want to behave themselves. No. It's more than likely. I feel like it's probably 100%. A result of some injuries, because impulsivity is huge. Do you agree with me, Carol?
Oh, absolutely.
When we talk about results of concussion, in a way this ties into something that, Carol, you've written about before, with migraines, as I understand it, migraines, chronic headache, depression, those are things that can result from concussion, can't they?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Migraine, headaches, chronic headaches are very, very common after concussion, and you'll see them in the book. You'll see them again and again and again and again. And one of the things I find really interesting about this whole field is that we've gotten to the point where concussions just are no longer considered harmless things. We're starting to realize the problem. And time frame here, 3 years ago when I pitched that book to longtime co-publisher, they didn't want to take a chance on it. It was too niche. Who would read a book about concussions? You know, how was that of interest to anyone? And in 3 years, obviously this has become a huge part of the national conversation, but there's another huge change going on right now before our very eyes, and that is the migraine and the headache connection. And, you know, it isn't just, it's traditionally been dismissed as a problem of women, women's, you know, raging hormones. And this is why, based on that, for a long time, it was generally believed that children don't get migraines, you know, no hormones yet. Men don't get migraines. In fact, back in 1983, I was told by a physician that men do not get headaches, and they certainly don't get migraines. And I said, of course they do.
Wait a minute.
Hold on.
A physician told you that men don't get headaches?
An MD told me this, and I said, that's nonsense. Of course they do. And he retreated a little bit and said, well, if they did, no real man would admit it.
Oh, boy.
And furthermore, if he ever saw a man with mentioning headaches and migraines on a workman's comp application, he would be immediately dismissed as malingering. That's old style. Now, what is happening right now is we're seeing an awful lot of men, lots and lots of men, you know, in males, returning from Iraqi, Afghanistan war veterans, especially those with head and neck injuries, with migraines, with chronic headaches. They just don't go away, and nothing helps them. And the pain can be so severe. This is not trivial. This isn't something that, you know, wimpy women make up. These are not girly men. The pain can be just so severe, so disabling, that it is driving combat veterans to suicide and knocking big, tough NFL linebackers out of the game. It's real. And so for the first time, starting to look at this, and my feeling about migraine, having researched this since for years and years and years, is that it is really better thought of not as one condition. The one condition thing is a mistake. It is much better thought of as a symptom, and it can be a symptom of many, many things. And a lot of those things, they're in the medical literature. They've been in the medical literature for 40, 50 years. They're there. There's papers and papers on them, and they are totally ignored, have been totally ignored in treatment and an evaluation and an understanding of the condition. And now it's starting to come out.
This idea of the evaluation of the condition is something we didn't touch upon earlier. How involved and how accurate, in a way, is testing for concussions?
Oh, that's good. The National Institute of Medicine put out a book just about a year ago called Sports-Related Concussions in Youth. And it's a pretty serious book. I mean, I don't think there's anything they didn't touch upon. Evaluation is huge, the testing. And just to go to just one point, since we're especially talking about neurofeedback, there's a test, an evaluation, it takes about an hour maybe, called a quantitative EEG. In other words, they're summarizing many, many data points from a person's brainwave. And this is accepted in a lot of courts. And this committee, you know, these are all very high-level medical and technical people, basically say that the quantitative EEG is the only thing that is truly accurate at this point. And that's saying a lot. The typical neuropsychological tests have their role, but they don't show the kind of damage that can be shown here. A quantitative EEG pinpoints the points on networks that aren't working well, and it's can be an incredible guide to treatment. Most neurofeedback people use those, and it's not all that expensive. There are people now who think that they, in fact, I've had people come to us and say they want a map as a baseline so that if something happens to them, they'll have some kind of data to back up the fact that they are now really different. Because you can't just look at somebody, and the best neuropsychological tests are, well, they've been around a long time, and they can't really pinpoint subtle changes. And subtle changes are not small changes. I'm just saying, you know, when somebody obviously can walk and talk and communicate fairly well, but with trouble, a neuropsych isn't going to pick that up.
And so there's also
evaluation
the
is absolutely key.
There's also the problem, isn't there, that a lot of times when you have the symptoms of concussion, like severe fatigue and confusion and ADD symptoms and terrible light sensitivity and so forth, that the symptom is shown as a sign of malingering.
Yeah, so if you have the symptoms of concussion,
you don't have a concussion.
Must be malingering because you have those symptoms.
All right, we're going to take a pause in our discussion, come back, talk more about this topic of concussion. Mary Lee Esty, Carol Shiflett with us on our program this Sunday morning.
WFAN, WFAN-FM, New York.
After your 8 o'clock update, Mink, it will be Rick Wolf along with the Sports Edge program. Mike Francesa from Mulcahy's after your 9 o'clock update. And, of course, Boomer and the gang along at 7:30 this morning with the NFL preview program we always enjoy on Sunday mornings.
Yes, we do.
And we roll until 7:30. By the way, let me just mention, too, next Sunday morning, we start another year of this program.
Oh, the anniversary show. Year 22 is about to begin.
This, I'm not going to say anything more than with the guest, one of the guests on the show, it may be one of the most unique broadcasts in the history of WFAN.
And you've had unique broadcasts. I mean, in your 22 years, I mean, you've done not
Here
one, but two of them on the 59th Street Bridge.
You love to throw that up, don't you? You just love to bring that up.
Those are tremendous memories. 59th Street Bridge, you're not at the station. Broadcasting on the phone, talking to people.
Paying toll, driving along.
There's no toll on the 59th Street Bridge. Yeah. It takes your toll, though.
Actually, it wasn't on the 59th Street Bridge. It was on the Triborough Bridge.
Oh, it was?
That's where it was. That's where I paid toll. Yes.
Yes.
Literally. Okay. All right. The memories Mink brings back on this program frighten me. It absolutely frightens me, the things that he comes up with. We're in discussion about the topic of concussion, traumatic brain injury. We've touched upon as well. A couple of guests have joined us on our program. Mary Lee Esty has been with us since we started our show at 6 this morning. Carol Shiflett has joined us as well. And they've been talking with us about some of the information that's contained in an interesting book entitled Conquering Concussion. And one of the things that you had mentioned early on in our discussion, and I want to focus on this in this portion of our program. You said you're passionate about prevention. Okay. People hear prevention, and one of the first things they think of is, okay, prevention, concussions, helmets. But you say it's more than just helmets.
Right. There's a biomechanical engineer who designs ejection seats for the military. And, of course, they have to deal with all kinds of forces there and plan ahead. And he points out that there's no helmet that can prevent a concussion. It can cut down on, obviously any helmet can cut down on skull fracture. But it's the acceleration, deceleration, so the brain, the human brain floats in fluid. So mm-hmm. if the skull is moving through space and stops or gets hit, the brain keeps bouncing and twisting and turning, and depending upon the lines of force, there'll be more or less damage. And so it's important to pick, you know, take... Find out as much as you can about your sport and the things that can help cut down on the risks. You had asked a question earlier about some of the, you know, long-term and common effects of concussion. And one is that one concussion can lead to more injuries because it affects reaction time.
And judgment.
Judgment, vision, people are more prone to fall. They'll have, I've got a client right now who says that most of her problems following her first concussion is she just has poor judgment about where her car is. So she has she hits lots of cars with little dings in parking lots. Vision is affected in a lot of different ways. Peripheral vision reduces. So my belief is, and this is a belief, I don't have anything research necessarily that would support this, is but through my clinical practice over 21 years now with this, if people have a concussion, and this is more obvious with children with sports injuries, and they get neurofeedback, they get those rid of those symptoms, they are much less likely to have another one. There are data that show that with each concussion, there will be more car accidents. The incidence, the percentage chance of having another one is geometric. It gets, instead of two, it becomes four, eight, et cetera. So it's important to keep in the best shape possible. And the one thing that people can do at home, everyone can do, is really good nutrition. And the best thing that seems to work, and there's nutritionists support this, is good quality protein, and quite a bit of it at every meal, helps the brain to repair itself. So don't skip breakfast, and don't eat just sugar pops for breakfast. You know, get some protein, get some good solid food in there. And Carol, you want to talk about pudding caps? So if we start with prevention with toddlers.
Oh, this prevention
goes
with
way back.
Yeah. Yep. I was reading. I stumbled across this. Didn't know about it before. I stumbled across this reading. Went back to review Hans Brinker and the Silver Skates, which is about, of course, a father getting a brain injury. And in there, just in passing, was a mention of something called a pudding cap, which is what they put on children. You might think of it more of a sausage cap, just a roll of cloth, fabric, leather, stuffed and filled to fit around the widest part of a child's head, the parts that are going to get bumped. And this is what they used. And the kid was protected. Infants were protected. Toddlers learning to walk were protected by this little roll of cloth. You can see it in paintings by Rubens. There is an example of the future president's wife, Adams, writing to her sister, asking for the loan of a pudding cap because her little Abby was learning to walk and bruising her head badly. And these later disappeared. They turned into straw hats, I found, the forerunner of the current helmet. And parents, I think, now are starting to use little bumpy caps on children more and more. And these are a great start. And then, of course, they get older and they want to do their bicycles. Absolutely have a helmet. They want to be on skateboards. Should absolutely have a helmet.
And wear them correctly.
And wear them correctly.
Hold the forehead, not shoved way back.
No. Way back on the back of your head so that, you know, their forehead and your hair is sticking out is not the way to wear them. The frontal lobes, the front of the brain is the most easily, it's one of the most important parts. It's the last to develop. It's the first to be injured. It's very, very fragile. And that's where so much of your personality and who you are lives. And another thing about sports, though, is not only picking the right sport, but making sure that you have good coaching and play sensibly. I spent years I play way too many sports. And yes, I've had injuries. You know, there's the skiing, there's the rock climbing, there is the soccer, and there's years of martial arts. And when you look, martial arts, for example, if you're
looking...
Wait
a minute, you did all those things?
Yes, I did.
Well, good for you.
Hubba. And I've got the dings to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I find really scary, now that I have more calibrated eyeballs, is that the martial arts, you know, especially back before you think about things like head injury, is all about being tough and doing things, you know, breaking boards and being a kick-ass, you know, whatever. And, you know, but you want to really watch what you're doing. First thing you want to do is look at your very experienced sensei. How does he look? How does she look? What kind of shape are they in? Do you want to look like that in 10 years? you probably want to avoid the places that are very big into doing things like breaking concrete blocks with your head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are people who do that. They don't look very good, and they're not quite firing in all cylinders. And one of the things I've been kind of appalled by for the last how many years now is looking at instructors, martial arts instructors, who can't handle money. They're very impulsive. They're giggling 1 minute in a volcano of just fury the next. And, you know, like they're channeling Toshiro Mifune. And they make silly decisions, or their car is an absolute mess. Just something's not quite right.
All symptoms of concussion.
All symptoms of concussion. And when you ask the students, you know, what's up with this guy? You know, the response very often is something along the lines of, well, sensei is functioning on a higher spiritual plane. No, it's head injury. And that needs to be recognized. You need to be aware of it. Soccer, good coaching. Any team sport, good coaching. When I was playing soccer.
Well, the prevention, Carol, for soccer for girls is one of the highest head injury sports, because girls' necks never get as strong as boys. So there's a movement now to help girls do various exercises to strengthen their
strengthen the neck. Absolutely. Good coaching here is also important. When I was playing, I had a coach who was an ex-Marine. And if you watch non-professional soccer games, school soccer games, very often what you'll see is this gaggle of boys and girls, whatever, running down the field all in one lump. If you watch a professional soccer game, that's not what you see. You see the grid moving up and down, in their playing their positions, in their spots. It's a passing game. You don't see them all lumped together where they can hit each other with their heads, where they can kick each other in the head, where they can do all sorts of terrible things to each other. And my ex-Marine coach used to say, one grenade would take you all out. Play your positions. And that's the kind of direction that a team really needs. And yes, you need the neck muscles, but first of all, don't hurt each other. Don't hurt your team members.
Right. You know? The issue, the brain injury research community now is also saying that a decision of the age at which to start a sport can be extremely important, and particularly in football, there's feeling that a easy guideline for everyone to see is that a boy should have hair in his armpits before playing contact, tackle football, because that means that his neck muscles are really strong now, and it greatly reduces the impact of concussion. Archie Manning did not let his boys play until they were much older. They didn't play contact. Maybe that has something to do with how good they are, besides being, you know, well-coached. It's important, I think, at this point, I'm hoping that some of your listeners want to know where they might be able to explore getting neurofeedback, maybe for themselves or their children or, you know, friends. So one of them is, there are three organizations where you can find a provider, so someone in your area to raise questions with. One is BCIA, the boycatia.org. Another is IS, like Sam, N like never, R.org. And another is AAP, like Peter, B like boy.org. All three of those, BCIA, ISNR, AAPB, have providers. And they're all over the world. There are thousands of them in the U.S. So anyone could be contacted to see if there's someone in the immediate area. But that, to me, is part of prevention. If there's one injury, you know, headache continues, inability to concentrate, teacher starts complaining, or you yourself have headache and you find you lose your keys all the time and you have trouble sleeping, or you sleep all the time and you're disorganized, you're irritable and explosive.
And you're cold.
Body temperature can be lowered because of the impact on thyroid. So these are people who should be able to help you.
Mm-hmm. All right. It's BCIA.org, ISNR.org,
correct.
And AAPB.org. We'll repeat
correct.
Those addresses before we are done in our discussion. We're going to take a pause here in our chat with Mary Lee Esty and Carol Shiflett.
Bob Salter, Sports Radio 101.9 FM, and Sports Radio 66. W-F-A-N.
The amazing thing is that some of those jingle singers were actually in the elevator booming forth on that one. Well, the way that they do these things on Sunday mornings are simply amazing. After our 8 o'clock update, of course, Rick Wolf is along with the Sports Edge program here on The Fan. I'm Bob Salter. We're in discussion with Mary Lee Esty and Carol Shiflett on our program, talking with us about the topic of concussion. We've touched a bit upon the topic of traumatic brain injury as part of this discussion, too. Now, you know, I asked you a little bit about this idea of prevention, and I guess at this point, because we're in kind of the wrap-up portion of our discussion, where do you see things going? I mean, you know, Carol, you mentioned something a couple of moments ago earlier in this discussion about the fact that when you originally pitched the idea for this publication that became the book 3 years ago, you know, there wasn't interest in this.
Mm-mm.
Where do you think, and Mary Lee, you can jump in on this as well, where do you think we'll be on this topic 3 years from now?
I think there'll be a lot more understanding of the brain, how it works, how it affects us, which is kind of a strange way to put it because we are our brains in so many ways. But just how much there is to learn, how much there is to know, and hopefully it will be applied.
Yeah, that's I'd agree with that. there was one, maybe, well, in terms of very young children and the choice of sports, it's very important to understand about brain development. All of those trillions of wires that make us who we are, we're not born with them ready to go. They're very, very tender. And up until, probably teen years, they're naked, basically. They're just these tiny wires, and there's a process of growth around them, a kind of an insulation called myelin that grows over time. And this is why young children should not play high-impact sports, because that myelin, as it grows, and it's still growing into teen years, but by the time we get to be teenagers, they're pretty, you know, they're well along in their maturity. But the young child falls, hits their head, they get hit, whatever. The impact on the development of the brain is enormous compared with later years. So that's another reason to really think very carefully about impact sports. Now, we can't, you know, we live in a sea of gravity. We're fighting gravity all the time. But we can use our heads to make good decisions. And I'm always saying that neurofeedback will help people get back to a better level of functioning. Rest alone doesn't do that, but we can use our heads to prevent as much as possible. And, you know, children are our treasures. They're our future. So we need to make good decisions about how they use that childhood so that they will have great adulthoods.
And how about and we've only got about a minute left here in our discussion, how about these images, the way in which concussion and injuries of that sort are portrayed in the media? Do we need to change that?
Oh, really? We really, really, really do. And it's had a big impact. Most of what we think we know about concussion really is based on movies, TV, cartoons, superheroes. It's
Carol
not real.
Called them the Hollywood head injuries.
yeah. the wedding planner, I think, is one of the worst. Most impossible scenarios. The best Hollywood production ever for brain injury is The Lookout with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. If you don't understand what's going on with head injury, if you don't believe it, if you think that someone is just acting out just to upset you, see that one.
And we didn't even talk about concussion and head injury leading to addiction.
Didn't have time to do that. Perhaps we can chat again. Thank you both very much for joining us, Carol Shiflett and Mary Lee Esty, talking with us on our program on The Fan, Conquering Concussion, Healing TBI Symptoms with Neurofeedback and Without Drugs is the book. The websites we mentioned earlier, bcia.org, isnr.org, and aapb.org. Thank you both for joining us on our program. Certainly good luck with your work as well. Along after our 8 o'clock update, Rick Wolf happens by. After 9, Mike Francesa's Football Sunday from Mulcahy's. And one of my favorite moments of the week is about to happen. We will see you at 6 next Sunday morning. Happy New Year!
Dear Sam, at AT&T you get a Surface 3 for $199 when it's bundled with any Windows smartphone, like the new Microsoft Lumia 950 on AT&T Next. Then, I can send my wish list online. Plus, paper letters cause paper cuts. Surface 3, new smartphone, no paper cuts. That's like $400 off. Your friend Ross, AT&T, mobilizing your world.
Select locations. Service 3 requires 2-year agreement. Must activate wireless service on both devices. Early termination, activation, or upgrade, and other fees, charges, and restrictions apply. See a participating store for details.